You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Gordon Brand Jr.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as European captain Thomas Bjorn names Paul Casey, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter and Henrik Stenson as his wildcard picks for the 2018 Ryder Cup.
I felt I had to go with the experience. I felt like I had to go with people that are proven in this environment. And so that's what I did. It was not an easy decision, but in the end, this was a decision that was reached. And making those phone calls to those four is easy, but it was tough to make the phone calls to the ones that missed out.
So Matt Wallace just misses out on selection, despite finishing with a flurry of birdies at the Made in Denmark to secure a hat-trick of European Tour wins in 2018.
So happy. Hard work again pays off. Determination, grit. I found a way to get it done. I put myself under pressure in practice, and then it comes up trumps on a Sunday.
A comprehensive look at both Ryder Cup sides to come, plus all the fallout from Denmark, and we'll look ahead to the next event, the Omega European Masters. I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm delighted to be joined by Gordon Brand Jr., a man who has represented Europe twice in the Ryder Cup. Gordon, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Dan.
Now then, your initial reaction to Captain Bjorn's four picks for the 2018 renewal of the Ryder Cup. Your thoughts? No real surprises, I would imagine.
No, there were no real surprises, but sort of worried a little bit. Casey, you know, he was induced to come over and participate in the Ryder Cup, hasn't played in it for 10 years. Garcia, well, you know, he is a legend in Ryder Cup terms. It has been exceptional, not only on the golf course, but certainly in the team room. Stenson is one of my sort of not sures, is because hasn't been playing well, maybe a little bit of injury, but again, what he brings to the table in the team room is extraordinary. But Poulter was obviously had to be in this team. You almost don't see a Ryder Cup team without Poulter. And, you know, there's some great things. Unfortunately, there was no place in the team for rookies. There was five rookies in the team already. So, you know, Matt Wallace, who's had a great run, has not been able to achieve the team. But I think he's gone for experience, not just experience on the golf course, but experience in the team room. He's really talked about team.
How key is that? You've played in two Ryder Cups. What does it mean when you're a rookie? Is it so different to when you've played in it on more than one occasion? What were your feelings when you teed it up for the first time?
Well, it was funny. It was because, say, what are you expecting when you're a rookie in the Ryder Cup? I don't know what I'm expecting because I've never been there. So, you know, it's all new to you. It's new that you are super nervous going into a foursomes game or a four-ball game. Where normally you go, right, you're playing at 105 with him and you go, well, fine, I'll be there. But now the anticipation and the run-up is dreadful, really. You know, you're actually quite pleased when you tee it up and get going. But prior to that, it is because, you know, you are part of your team and you want to make your points.
So how much more comfortable did you feel when you played for the second time? Was it vastly different because you'd experienced the Ryder Cup previously?
Not vastly different, but then you had a rough idea what was going to happen. And obviously, with a little bit of history, you knew how to deal with it a little bit better. We played in Muirfield Village in 87, and then we played at the Belfry 89. The Belfry 89, as you can imagine, the European support was massive. And so you sort of understood that. You understood what was going to come towards you. So if you know what's coming towards you, you have something in your head to deal with it.
But it must have been more nerve-wracking to make your debut away from home. And I guess Captain Bjorn's picks are a little bit of reaction to what happened in the last Ryder Cup. But we are at home this time around. We are in France. We'll have the vast majority of the support. Would you have liked to see a few more rookies in? Does that make any difference, home or away?
I just couldn't see how he could put another rookie in that team. There was no way. I mean, we've got five rookies in the team. Although, you know, what does rookie mean, really? You know, is Fleetwood a rookie in what shape or form?
I'm just going to rattle through the whole team. Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Rory McIlroy, Francesco Molinari, Alex Noren, Torbjörn Olesen, John Rahm, Justin Rose, Paul Casey, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter and Henrik Stenson. So, as you mentioned, there are five rookies. You briefly talked about Tommy Fleetwood there, John Rahm. I mean, yes, they're rookies, but there's a little asterisk next to them because they are worldwide players who have played tremendously well over the last 18 months.
The little asterisk is, oh, yes, lovely, I'm glad he's in the team. Oh, yes. You know, Hatton as well, you know, wonderful, wonderful, strong player. Not a great goal swing, but he gets an awful lot out of his game. Alex Noren, is he, you know...
Is he a rookie? Well, he is.
Is he? Yeah, but not really, is he? They're international golfers and they are extremely strong and they've worked so hard to get in that team. They'd be relishing the challenge.
We can hear from the European captain next, Thomas Bjorn.
Well, I think it's a great team. I really do. I think it's a great 12 players, great guys. They'll get on really well. They'll make this work extremely well together. But they need to, because they're up against a very strong American team. So they need to go in and make this work. And they'll help each other. They'll make each other better. They'll do a really, really good job. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm honoured and privileged to have 12 guys that are this good. Well, now all the fun starts, you know, getting all this matched up and making sure that we have the pairings and having everybody lined up and ready to go. You know, that's the fun bit. And I spent 20 months when I'm done with the Ryder Cup as Ryder Cup captain. And, you know, the first 19 months is very much a lead into and what if and thinking about different things. Now it's reality because now you've got the 12 players and you can work with that and the group of them together. And obviously you work with some of them and talk to some of them that made the team early. But now it's about getting the group together and everybody knows where they stand and go in and so they can go in and do the job that we hope they can deliver on Sunday.
So that was Thomas's thoughts and explanations behind the Ryder Cup picks. You mentioned briefly players who have just missed out. How close do you think Matt Wallace was to getting a pick? He's just won in Denmark. He's won three times on tour. Was he the next cab off the rank, do you think? Or was it Eddie Pepperell? Was it Matt Fitzpatrick? Was it Rafa Cabrera-Bello? How do you see the players that have just missed out?
It was really unfortunate for Matt Wallace because...
Would you have given him a pick?
If that was me today at 2 o'clock, I couldn't have picked him. I could not have picked him. And it's almost that your face doesn't fit this time. For next time, maybe, you know, if he gets in the position. His face didn't fit because there's five rookies there already. And you can go on about it. Well, does it make a difference? He's a guy in form. But I think Thomas has to put a team together. It's not about individuals. So he's picked four very strong players to back up the team, know what they're doing, been there before sort of thing. He didn't want someone in there. And we don't know how the rookies are going to perform because it could be overwhelming.
But of course, Thomas Peters was a rookie last time out and did remarkably well. How unlucky was he to miss out? I know he's not had a great time of things since the last Ryder Cup on the European Tour or playing in the majors, but he showed up well on the PGA Championship in America. He led the Czech Masters early and then just dropped away. But he's been on leaderboards over the course of the last couple of weeks. How unlucky was he to miss out?
He was unlucky, but I don't think it was a strong enough show for him over the last year for him to warrant a place.
The players that did get in, we've mentioned them briefly. Paul Casey won on the PGA Tour early on in the calendar year, won the Valspar. Hasn't done too much since then, but I guess if you win a PGA Tour event, you're always going to be in the captain's plans. And the fact that he's come back to the European Tour means that he's dedicated himself to trying to get back into the team. And he's played in Europe as well, hasn't he?
Well, he has. I think Bjorn has missed Casey as a part of Europe, really. And I think he desperately sees him. It'd be interesting to see or ask Thomas his reactions. Is this the team you wanted when you were made Ryder Cup? Would this be the team you wanted? And I think in some sort of way he had quite a lot of the team picked or ready to go.
It would have to take something spectacularly for him to come off.
And Casey was one of those guys. He was desperate for Casey to be in the side.
Does the same apply to Ian Poulter, who may have made it a little easier for Thomas Bjorn because he won in Houston on the PGA Tour and he had to win to get into the Masters. He put himself under pressure. He won in a playoff as well. And he showed up in big events this year, hasn't he?
He's a big player, isn't he? And then becomes no bigger player than Poulter in a Ryder Cup. It's a no-brainer. You know, if we could have four Poulters in the team, we'd have them. Whether they're rookies or not, he wears his heart on his sleeve and is, as a person that can inspire the rest of the team, him and Garcia are top of the tree.
Yeah, just the 12 wins from, I think, 18 matches all told, and he's never been beaten in the singles as well, I don't think, hasn't he, in Poulter? So he's got a fantastic record. Does the same rules apply a little bit to Sergio Garcia? He's got loads of experience. Made his debut in 99 in Brookline, didn't he, Sergio? He's not had the wins that Poulter and Casey have had this year. He's not really had a good season at all. He didn't make the 125 on the PGA Tour. Is he in because of that Ryder Cup experience, do you think? Because you can't pick him on current form, can you?
No, there's no question that Garcia is coming in with the least form of any Ryder Cup player. Why would you pick him? Team room effect, Garcia effect, Jon Rahm as well to pair up with. You know, it's the Seve of the team. So fortunate enough to be in that team room when Seve in there, and it's inspiring.
We've seen previously, though, certainly European players who might not have been in the best of form, but when it comes to the Ryder Cup, they are transformed. Players like Colin Montgomery, never won a major, obviously. Lee Westwood as well, to a certain extent. They both struggled on the greens when it came to major championships, but when it came to the Ryder Cup, they weren't leaving putts short. They just seemed to grow an extra couple of inches. They played just that little bit better, an extra 10 or 15%, which I don't know what happens when you're in that European team room, but a lot of our guys seem to get it, don't they?
Well, it becomes the traditional match play format where it doesn't matter if you run it by 3 and 4 feet because you're not thinking about the next putt. It's this putt has to go in for a half or a win. So there is a certain amount of freedom. It becomes much more aggressive. And of course, some people, it just frees up completely.
Henrik Stenson, quick word on him. You mentioned him previously. To my mind, he would have definitely been in the team automatically if it wasn't for the fact that he's been nursing an elbow injury, I think, isn't it, that's caused him issues over the course of the summer. He's not started as many tournaments as he wanted, but prior to that, he was in, or getting back to some type of form. He's not played particularly badly in stretches, just that slight question mark about his fitness. But I'm presuming he said to Thomas, look, I'm fit enough to play, don't worry about me.
Well, I think he's had they've been in deep discussions, the captain and Stenson, about what Stenson needs to do. And I think Stenson has put such a good voice forward that he wants to be in this team. He's ready to be in this team. And yes, I agree with you. He probably is the second worst form at this moment, but it is Henrik Stenson. I mean,
he's an open winner and one of the best open winners ever.
I mean, that Troon Sunday was the golf of dreams, wasn't it? So, you know, and it is the golf of dreams we look for, isn't it? So guys that have been there as well, it's vitally important.
Talked about players who've just missed out. We've talked about the picks. But in terms of key performers, we mentioned Tommy Fleetwood, we mentioned Jon Rahm. They are rookies. When you look towards the top of the tree, how key are players like Rory McIlroy, like Justin Rose, do you think, when it comes to the action in Paris? Are those two going to be our main two players, do you think? Are they going to play every single four-ball foursome, obviously singles match?
No, I think that's too much for players now to play that. Too much pressure, too much to ask from somebody, but you would have to look as Rory or Molinari to be leaders of the team. I think Molinari is so underrated. He's not going to knock you out in one punch, but I'll tell you what, he'd be there on the 18th green, still jabbing away at you and finish you off. There's so many leaders in that team. You know, Poulter's a great leader. Garcia's a great leader. Tommy Fleetwood would be loved to take that challenge up as well. So I think from the four picks today, the team has become stronger than I thought it was going to be.
What about key pairings? Are we going to see Stenson and Rose again? Who are we going to see McIlroy with this time? Because he was brilliant with Peters, wasn't he, last time, even though we were beaten, of course, by the United States. Who are the natural pairings, do you think?
Natural pairings, well, I'm going to go for Fleetwood, Rose, Garcia, Rahm, Rory with, say, Molinari. I think that would be a lovely one. And Poulter, you can put him out on his own.
I was going to say,
fine.
When you start to look at all of the players, you don't really see a weak pairing, do you? You could put anyone with anyone, really.
No, you've got to watch out with foursomes and fourballs. You know, do you take two bangers out, you know, two guys that are going to just smash it around the golf course and try and make loads of birdies? And, of course, then foursomes, is, you know, it's got to be in play. You can't put, you know, say, Rory out with maybe...
With Rahm.
Rahm, you know. It doesn't work. But, you know, at the end of the day, it still is hit the fairways, hit the greens. And we have some great players here. But I think, actually, if we just had a team of Ian Poulter,
yeah,
we'd be fine.
We'd be fine.
We'd be fine. We won't need about pairings.
We can't have a full team of Ian Poulters, though. No, unfortunately not. Do the pairings make a massive difference, do you think, as long as you get them generally right? Can you get it spectacularly wrong?
Well, I don't know how you can get it spectacularly wrong, because there is no crystal ball to say this pairing is going to work and the players are going to play well. Because if one plays poorly in foursomes, you're done, because, you know, you're recovering all the time. And then if one of the players doesn't play well in the four balls, it means one player is taking on two American players, which is an awful big ask. You know, they have to gel in very well together.
Which of these players might not the course suit, do you think? They've all played there over the course of the last few years on the European Tour. We've seen one or two play for the first time in the last couple of years. Is it a course that suits a bomber, suits a fiddly player, one that's accurate off the tee? What type of player will do well at the Golf National? Because it's going to be different in terms of the course setup, isn't it, than what we see for the French Open?
I think they're going to make it tighter. Going to make it harder.
There's a lot of rough around, isn't there?
Harder to hit the fairways, i.e. a lot of rough around. I don't see it. This is not a bomber's course. It's fairly restrictive. First, for example, probably at an iron off the tee. It's very much a second-shot golf course. I mean, we only got to go into 15 and 18 really tough golf holes.
18's not going to play as 18, is it, this time around?
They're moving it around,
aren't
they?
So 16, I think, yeah.
So 16, yeah. as we know it, as 18. Incredibly strong golf holes. And it doesn't matter, you almost can't go too far up the fairway. It gets very restrictive, so it's put it in place. So it's not a bomber's course. But even if it was a bomber's course, I think it's a second shot golf course.
Do we make the greens a little slower because the Americans are used to quick greens? Is that what we would do? Is that what Thomas Bjorn would demand?
Well, I think the day of doing that has gone out the window, because a great deal of these players play in America. We don't want to make it so slow that you feel you're wrapping the ball. But there will be some. Obviously, Thomas will have a massive say on how he wants the golf course set up, which is already set up now. So he may have put some bunkers in. He may want some tees played in different positions. But it's a golf course. I mean, I played it 25 years ago when it opened. It was a wonderful golf course. And it is that good a golf course. They haven't had to change any of the design at all, apart from put some back tees in. It's that good.
Well, time to get a view from the opposing side now as we cross stateside to speak to legendary US golf broadcaster Bob Bubka. Bob, first of all, what do you make of Thomas Bjorn's picks?
Well, all I can go by is Gordon Brand Jr. with a big smile on his face. So that tells me that Thomas Bjorn is on the money with the picks of that he made of Casey Garcia, Poulter, and Stenson. I mean, pure Ryder Cup royalty in those four picks. Just amazing as far as I'm concerned.
But, Bob, not all of them have been in fantastic form recently, have they?
No, that's a good point. But, you know, Gordy can speak to it a lot better than I can, having played on a couple of teams. I mean, you throw form out the window. Let's just talk about Sergio Garcia. If Garcia hadn't played at all this year, I feel he's totally capable of showing up in France and playing wonderfully well. That's just what Ryder Cup does to him. Previous form, I'm not that big a believer in. Sometimes it's a good indication, sometimes it's not. But I don't think Thomas Bjorn could have picked four better players, is the point I'm trying to make.
It's a smiley Gordon here. You're dead right, Bob. I don't think it could go on better from our side. Do you see any problem with Stenson as being a pick? I know we're going for strong picks here, but in injury-wise, and we talked about Garcia maybe not at his best form, do you think Stenson's going to stand up?
Well, you know, I know Hendrik very well, and I feel very confident that Thomas Bjorn made a phone call to Hendrik Stenson and said, Hendrik, you know what this means to me. This is going to be my one shot at immortality. You know, if you're a Ryder Cup captain and you go on to win, especially on European soil, you're the stuff of legends. And he had to have said to Stenson, be honest with me, Henrik, are you okay? Is the injury going to be a problem? And Stenson, I think I know well enough that he would be very honest. He would not say to Thomas, oh, yeah, I'm good, and then show up and not be 100%. That's how I feel. So I really don't have any concerns over Henrik Stenson. I'm fully aware of his capability of playing the sport and healthy. He's one of the best players in the world.
So in terms of the European team as a whole, Bob, you would see it as very strong, the strongest possible that Thomas Bjorn could put out. You weren't, for example, surprised that Thomas Peters missed out, or Matt Wallace, who's won three times on tour, or maybe even Matt Fitzpatrick went close at the weekend and, of course, has played Ryder Cup before. As far as you're concerned, as from an American standpoint, this is the toughest team that we're going to face.
Yeah, absolutely. I can assure you that Jim Furyk was not overly overjoyed by these four picks, because he had to say to himself, well, Thomas Bjorn, no surprise, but he picked the four best players that can help that European team. It's just shaping up now because of the strength of the U.S. squad. I mean, when you have the number one, number two, number three ranked players in the world leading off your team, I mean, you're a strong side. So, you know, the volume of work for the U.S. side speaks for itself. And then you have a very strong European team with the addition of these four players. I honestly, a gun held to my head right now, and if I was asked who's the favorite, I really can't say. I mean, certainly on paper, the U.S. would be the favorite, but the fact that it's on European soil, I mean, it's amazing to me that Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson have never won a Ryder Cup on foreign soil. Never won a Ryder Cup on foreign soil. Tiger's 42, Phil's 48. This is the 12th team for Phil Mickelson. Never won on foreign soil.
It's incredible, isn't it? You've got to go back to the early 90s, of course, for the last time the USA took it to the Europeans over here. Obviously, Jim Furyk named three of his four wildcard picks. You alluded to a couple of them there, Woods and Mickelson. We've got Bryson DeChambeau as well. I guess that was an obvious one, Bob. There was no real surprises, was there, when Jim announced those just the other day?
Well, no, because Bryson DeChambeau, he is, you know, the mad scientist. He's undoubtedly the smartest player ever to play on the PGA Tour. He was a physics major in college and uses physics to play golf. All of his irons are the same length. I mean, he plays the sport completely different than anybody on the planet. He takes into account the angle of his feet, the loft of the fairway that he's hitting from, the elevation of the green, the direction of the wind. I mean, it literally is like a mad scientist prior to striking a golf ball. It's incredible what he goes through. He makes such a huge effort to detail. And let me just share with you how far he goes into detail. You know, somehow, some way, ping pong has become part of what happens at Ryder Cups, and especially in the United States team room. So what did Bryson DeChambeau do about 6 months ago? He built a robot that hits ping pong balls at him, and he would stand for hours you know, hitting back these ping pong balls. He said he didn't want to go into the United States team room not being proficient at ping pong.
Gordy, you're having this?
A
robot ping pong player.
Yeah, wrong.
Could you beat a robot ping pong player, Gordy?
Run, Forrest, run.
Run.
It's like a box of chocolates, isn't it?
It's extraordinary.
Well, I remember the team room at Glen Eagles, they had a ping pong table the team room.
Gathering dust or used?
No, it was well used. It was Harrington and Garcia playing a healthy game of table tennis.
US team in full is Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau. I say in full, one missing, of course, which will be revealed. It is a very strong team, Bob. There's no doubt about that. We'll get your thoughts on the team as a whole in just a second, but we can hear from one of the names just mentioned, Bryson DeChambeau, the 24 24-year-old made his spot in the US side safe with back-to-back FedEx Cup playoff wins at the Northern Trust and the Dell Technologies Championship.
There was a lot that had to change in order for me to get here. You know, my coach, Mike Shy, my agent, Brett, the sick putter guys, and I'm fortunate enough to have a great team around me. All of us have put in a combined effort. And then Como has been helping me out too a little bit, Chris Como. So all of them have combined to really help me be the player that I am today. So it's been a lot of work, and I can tell you that it's paying off.
Fascinating to hear from Bryson DeChambeau. Bob, I know obviously he was going to get in with two wins in the playoffs, but even before his successes, there's a lot of chat about Tiger Woods wanting Bryson in the team. Do you think he just needed to play well in the playoff tournaments rather than win them? Obviously, he rubber stamps his selection with wins, but do you think he was in the conversation anyway?
I really do, and I think that Tiger had been lobbying for Bryson DeChambeau. Tiger admires the scientific approach to golf that Bryson brings, and it's almost a pairing made in heaven because, quite frankly, it wouldn't be easy for just anybody to be paired with Bryson DeChambeau because of the mathematical test that he puts himself to prior to hitting any golf shot. But Tiger is fascinated by this approach, and I think actually it's going to be somewhat of a learning experience for both of them. And to think that Tiger is going to possibly be playing with somebody that he could learn something about golf from seems incredible. It's obvious that Bryson can learn a lot from Tiger. So I think this was a predestined pairing. We'll wait and see if Jim Furyk follows through on it. But I feel very strongly that they will be paired together. And certainly Tiger not going to be bothered by the mental gymnastics of a Bryson DeChambeau.
Oh, Bob, does that not make Bryson a one-off? Can he play with anyone else in the team?
Well, I mean, if he keeps winning, every probably going to be more guys that are going to play like Bryson. But, you know, I mean, he's an amazing talent. Yeah. I mean, this kid's won the NCAA individual title at college. He's a former U.S. amateur champion. Now he's won back-to-back playoff victories. I mean, he's a real deal. And to think that he wasn't even alive the last time the United States won on foreign soil is absolutely incredible.
Well, there you go. But one question. Do you think the U.S. team picks are as strong as the European team picks?
No, I don't. I really don't. Well, it's a tough question.
You're talking about Woods and Mickelson here, Bob. You're not confident with those two.
Fortunately, their play justifies the selection. But they were going to be on the team. The minute that Jim Furyk was made captain, and Jim Furyk, I can only imagine the conversation went something like this. Well, Jim, you're the captain, and, you know, on paper, you're going to have four picks. That's going to be a lot. So to help you out, we don't want you thinking about four guys. We really want you to think about two guys because we think that Phil and Tiger should be part of the scene. Jim Furyk is, you know, great friends with Phil, great friends with Tiger. He said, hey, I want him on the team. So that's no big deal.
So we're not suggesting that they're weak links, certainly not Woods after the summer that he's had.
No, he's not a weak link at all. I mean, just the intimidation factor. Funny part is, I would guess that Tiger somehow, some way is going to be ending up playing against Molinari.
And
again. Say, wow, again, right. They played before. Molinari won. Molinari won at Carnoustie when Tiger had the lead. So if there's a player in reality that Molinari is probably not worried about, it's probably Tiger Woods. Everybody else on the team would have some trepidation about going against the second greatest player ever to play the game. But I don't think Molinari's in that category.
Well, I would maybe beg to differ on that. I think Tiger is back to a certain extent, but there's certain pieces of the jigsaw that aren't back. Because as you alluded to, he was leading the Open at Carnoustie. 11 and 12 sorted that out with a bogey and a double bogey. I don't think Tiger has the intimidation he did 15 years ago, and I don't think the European team worry about him.
What I think Thomas Bjorn should do is bring Gordon Brand Jr. in to convince that team that there's no need to be intimidated by Tiger Woods because he's not the player he was 15 years ago.
It's been done, Bob. It's been done. Europe don't miss a trick.
Are you going to be invited in the team room, Gordy, do you think?
I was last time. Excellent. I may go again. Yeah,
just a bit of a pep talk if it's all going a bit pear-shaped.
No problem. It won't go. Dan, don't worry. It's a long time off.
I'm not concerned at all, Gordy. I'm sure you can certainly rally the troops if needed. Bob, when we look at the strength of the US side, you mentioned the top three players in the world. They've got Ryder Cup experience, the vast majority as well, and you know the likes of Patrick Reed's going to relish it. We saw Justin Thomas, who's a rookie, come and play the French Open this year. Brooks Koepka's got the two majors this season. I mean, there's an awful lot of strength. I've got to tell you that over here, the bookmakers do make the United States slight favourites, and when we look at that side, you are very, very strong.
Obviously, the bookmakers are looking at the world rankings and. You know, to make a team that has the number one, number two, and number three ranked players in the world on the side of an underdog would seem somewhat of a travesty. But when all things are sorted out, the world rankings, the current form, past experience, foreign soil, I think this is probably as close a Ryder Cup as we've ever had. Going into it. Now, Gordy can speak to this a lot better than I can. It's a short thing. 18 holes in golf is really a blink of an eye. And sometimes when momentum starts rolling, it's like a little snowball on top of a mountain. You know, that little snowball halfway down that mountain is a big snowball. And, you know, that's the danger both sides have, that one team or the other will start gaining momentum, and then it's almost impossible to stop.
I rattled through the team previously. Who is going to have the biggest influence on the US team, do you think, from a playing point of view, Bob? Will we see Dustin Johnson come to the fore? Will it be a Jordan Spieth? Who do you think might be the man to get the most points, to drive on a potential US win?
Well, you have to take a hard, long look, certainly at Patrick Reed after his performance at Hazeltine, going head-to-head with Rory McIlroy in an epic Ryder Cup match, and he's backed it up with winning the green jacket. He's going to show up in France loving the Ryder Cup even more than he did when he left Hazeltine. I think he has the potential, certainly, once again, to be the real star of the show.
A couple more points of order before we let you escape, Bob. First of all, vice-captains. Jim Furyk's been pretty quick to announce Zach Johnson and Matt Kuchar joining his other vice-captains. You surprised that those two have got the nod? Because they both could have played, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, pretty surprising that, he would make that announcement. It's an indication to me in a strange way that somebody's going to have to do something really exceptional to keep Tony Finau off the team as the 12th pick. The interesting captain's pick is David Duval, because David Duval will bring to the team. He's not intimidated by any of the players. David Duval is not going to be a yes man to Jim Furyk. If somebody's not playing well, even up to Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson, David Duval will go to Jim and say, I think you ought to sit Phil this afternoon. I think you ought to sit Tiger this afternoon. And actually, Jim Furyk said that's really what he needs. He doesn't need anybody to agree with him. He needs somebody to be bold and say things that maybe would be difficult to say by anybody else. But David Duval, a former number one player in the world, doing very well now in his role as an analyst on Golf Channel, and really has, you know, the ingredients to go to Jim Furyk and tell him exactly how he feels. Whether Jim responds to that direction. That remains to be seen. But Jim is getting a fresh voice along those lines in the selection of David DeVal. I think it was sheer genius.
Possible pairings, Spieth and Thomas, I think, want to play with each other. I'm sure that's going to happen. Who else are the obvious ones? Who would you like to see pair up for the Americans, Bob?
You know, I'm almost in the camp of, you know, let's get the team in. Let's draw names out of a hat. All you guys are good enough to play with one another. Nobody's any better than anybody else. This is a team sport. We don't need any scientific analyzation of who plays well with who, maybe with the exception of Bryson and Tiger Woods. I think anybody with anybody else would be a perfect match.
Okay, now you've said on a number of occasions that you think it's very, very tight between the two, but we've got to push you for a winner. Bob, who's going to win the 2018 Ryder Cup?
With the caveat that this will not be heard in the United States.
No caveats allowed. Come on.
Europe's going to win.
Oh, my word. Bob. You know, I always knew you were one of us.
It's your trump card, that is, Bob.
I always knew. And don't worry, this will be tweeted out across the States, so just be careful. Bob, thanks for joining us. Great input, as per usual. We will speak again soon.
See you, Bob.
Hey, look forward to it. Hey, take care, Gordon. We'll
see you there.
No real surprise that Bob has gone for Europe, because I know that he likes an awful lot of European players. Gordy, who are you going for?
After four wonderful selections from Thomas Bjorn, Europe to win.
I hope that Europe will win. I will be rooting for Europe, but I've just got this sneak that it might be the USA's time to win on European fairways, Gordy.
How wrong.
Just look at their team.
Well, yeah, but seen it all before, haven't we?
We
have seen it so many times.
You know,
the Masters winners, US Open winner, look at him, he's so-and-so. No, it doesn't matter.
Counts for nothing when the Ryder Cup comes around.
Nothing at all.
I hope Bob's right as well, but I think it might just be the USA.
You're like a parrot, just repeating yourself.
Well, that's the Ryder Cup done and dusted. Time now, though, to look back at last week's events on the European Tour, the Made in Denmark, where amongst Matt Wallace's stunning third victory of the season, we had the dramatic subplots of Torbjørn Olesen, as said, securing the eighth and final automatic place in the European Ryder Cup side. But more on that shortly. Let's focus on the Englishman Wallace's win. He birdied five of his final six holes to post a 5-under 67 and get to 19-under, joining compatriots Lee Westwood, Jonathan Thompson and Stephen Brown in a playoff. Westwood and Thompson were eliminated with pars at the first extra hole as Wallace holed a six-foot birdie putt and Brown converted from half that distance to extend the contest. The duo returned to the 18th for a third time, where Wallace finished it with some serious style, firing his approach to 5 feet and rolling in a birdie to make it 7 birdies in his last 8 holes, including back-to-back birdies on the 18th, of course. That is some playing, Gordy, from Matt Wallace, because at some stage, certainly over the course of the front nine, he looked way out of the tournament. He's come from a mile back to win.
Well, I mean, Westwood was the man, wasn't it? It looked like he was going to pick up another victory. 3 shots ahead at one time, but ran out of puff. Matt Wallace took advantage of that and has come through with his third win.
It's the second time in the space of 2 weeks that we've seen a veteran European Tour player, and a very good one at that, fluff their lines down the stretch, because, of course, Porrick Harrington had the opportunity in the Czech Republic. Andrea Pavan managed to win there. Do you just get a little ring rusty, even though you've got all those tour wins over the years? If you've not been in the heat of the battle recently, that experience might not count for as much as it should do.
Well, and the experience is obviously there in bagfuls, isn't it? But, I mean, you know, it's great when you're a sort of young player and still trying to win a tournament. Not that Westwood or Harrington weren't, but that just ran out of puff, really, and the young boys swept over.
I was going to say, we have to give an awful lot of credit to Pavan and indeed Matt Wallace, who, when he gets in positions to win, he does not back away, does he? He's not one to get nervous. He's not one to get intimidated. He will go for the jugular.
Yeah, I think there are some people that just get the blinkers on and all they see is forward, 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 and there's no stopping the performance. There's no sort of, oh, I just play in. You know, it is always, you know, take your opportunity. It is now.
Great social media reaction. This from Eddie Pepperell, who said, Christ, he'd be on my team. Matt Wallace, what a performance. I guess he's talking about the Ryder Cup. We mentioned Matt before, and we think he was maybe a little bit unlucky. Different circumstances, different years, he might have got in the team. Tyrrell Hatton says, that man doesn't fear winning. Some performance, 10 birdies in the last 13 holes. And so Nick Faldo, congrats, Matt Wallace, from what I can see from afar, hashtag Montana, that's where he was, a seriously talented player. Hope you make the team. I think a lot of people thought he was going to make it. You know, we've seen it previously. Eduardo Molinari with a late rattle to get in the team. Thomas Peters as well managed to get in late on in the Ryder Cup, but not for Matt this time. A future Ryder Cup player, there you'd say.
It's a future Ryder Cup player, but what do you need to do to get in the Ryder Cup team in 2018? You can't be another rookie. It does not fit.
Yeah, it was just the way that 2018 worked out, I think. Let's hear from Matt Wallace next.
That's what I do. I kind of set myself positions where I have to do things, and more often than not, I kind of get it done. Lucky, yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have done it when I've needed to in a few tournaments now, but when my back's against the wall, I don't shy away from pushing myself off there and trying to get the job done. And I kept saying to myself at the end there, you can make this. You have done everything to be able to make this putt, and I did it, so super happy.
Positive thinking, no doubt about that, Gordy.
Well, there's a reaction, isn't it? The blinkers effect. He sees it, he knows what he wants, there is a plan, and he can actually finish the plan. He can finish all his meal, and he wipes the plate with him.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy, that one, Gordon. I appreciate that. It was his second playoff win of the season.
Where that plate came from. Can we do that again, please? Stop it,
so
Dan.
Hang on a minute. Serious. So let's just... he's wiped his mouth, he's washed his hands. What happens next again?
Wipe the plate with him, wipe the floor with him. How's that? Where the plate was.
You know this is all going to stay in, don't you?
Correct.
Well, he was his second playoff win of the season after his exploits at the Hero Indian Open, and he's only ever faced Englishmen in playoffs, Beef in India and Lee Westwood, Jonathan Thompson and Stephen Brown in Denmark. Wallace's win sees him move to 17th in the Race 2 Dubai rankings presented by Rolex, and he jumps from 76th to 53rd in the official World Golf rankings. Well, tied second, Stephen Brown believes there's not much more he could have done to secure what would have been a first European Tour title.
I felt like I kind of hung in there quite well because I kind of made a couple of mistakes, 3 and 4, the first few holes. So to come back after that and give it a go at the end was pleasing. But, you know, fair play to Matt. He won it. You know, I couldn't have done much more. I didn't really feel like I had my best stuff coming in here. So to somehow be able to almost win the tournament like that was very pleasing, and hopefully I can carry that on for the rest of the year where there's some big tournaments, like, you know, the British Masters will be fun. I'm staying at home for that. I've played there a lot, so if I can try and take this form into these few events coming up, then that'll be great.
Talented player. We've not always seen the best of him on the full tour. He was 7th in Sicily back in May, but that's a huge shot in the arm, isn't it? Second place in a good event. It'll give him a lot of confidence for the running.
I mean, you know, a name that we really haven't heard about, really, but, these people have to come through at some time. A nice little breakthrough for him, as he said. Maybe messed up at the beginning of the round. He'll learn from that. Next time, it may be better for him.
And as mentioned, Dane Torbjørn Olesen secured the final automatic qualification spot in the European Ryder Cup team as Matt Fitzpatrick failed to overhaul him on the final day.
It's been a tough week. It's been a long week. A lot of things on my mind. It's been difficult, but it's been great to learn that different kind of pressure, and it's just been so different, and I think I've learned a lot from myself this week, and I think I handled it pretty well. Maybe a couple of things that could have been better, but it was a tough week, but I feel pretty happy now. It's nice to play yourself in the team and being inside that top eight. That'll probably make me feel a little bit more comfortable when I get to the Ryder Cup. So I'm happy and I'm very proud of myself, the way I've done things this summer and handled myself.
He's been excellent, hasn't he? Winner in Italy, second in Germany, third at the Bridgestone. I think that was the one that maybe made the Americans sit up and take notice. He was fourth in Sweden as well a few weeks ago. He's going to be an asset to the European Ryder Cup team, isn't he?
Yeah, and that was interesting what he said. It's nice to have played himself into that team, not a chosen person. So he's got to feel really good about himself. He's put the work in, he's had the results. So, you know, he's in for a different task in a couple of weeks, the Ryder Cup, and we'll see how he goes. But he's certainly got the pedigree.
Top 10 then, made in Denmark at Silkeborg Rye. Of course, Matt Wallace, the winner. After a playoff, tied second, Stephen Brown, Lee Westwood and Jonathan Thompson. Then fifth on his own, the South African Eric Von Rooyen. Then after that, home favourite Lucas Bjerregaard, or one of them at least, in sixth place. Tied seventh, Thomas Detry and Matt Fitzpatrick. Matt, who unfortunately missed out on the Ryder Cup squad. Ashley Chesters was in ninth. And in tenth, a tie between two of them, Sam Horsfield and Adrian Otegi. Last week's predictions from Robert Lee and Paul Eales. Mr. Robert Lee got it right, you know. He picked out Matt Wallace. He gets 20 points for that. He picked out Torbjørn Olesen as well. Tied 20th. That's 5 points for the presenter. 25 points all told. The co-presenter, which was Paul Eales, went for Thomas Peters, who was tied 34th, and JB Hansen, who was tied 49th. 0 points for each. Zero plus zero equals Gordy. Correct. Zero. Just a reminder about the rules, and this is more for Gordy than our regular listeners. It is presenter versus co-presenter. Two picks each. One pick has to be from outside the top 50 in the final 2017 Race to Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for five, five for a top 20, and minus five for a miscut. That's the point scoring system. In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, the imperious Ingmar Bergman still leads the overall global standings, while Daniel Silva got the most points last week. In the Race to Dubai Show Mini League, listener Lewis Hay was the highest scorer from the Made in Denmark, while Magnus Dulker is out in front. Check out the Fantasy 3 to watch for the Omega European Masters this week on europeantour.com. Let's get to the Race to Dubai standings next. And because you'll always go 10 to 1, that's how I'll do it. So that's sort of
1 to 10.
No, 10 to 1, a sort of B flat to A sharp. You familiar with any music, Gordy?
Yeah.
Can you play anything? Can you tinkle the ivories?
No.
Okay. Rafa Cabrera Bayo missed out on the Ryder Cup team, unfortunately. He is 10th in the Race to Dubai rankings. Tyrrell Hatton in 9th. Russell Knox in 8th. Another man that potentially could have made Thomas Bjorn's side. John Rahm in 7th. Torbjørn Olesen safely in the squad in 6th. Alex Noren 5th. Rory McIlroy in 4th. Tommy Fleetwood in 3rd. Patrick Reed, the Masters champ and European Tour member, of course, is in 2nd. But leading our Open champ for 2018 and top of the Race to Dubai rankings, it is Francesco Molinari. A couple of other bits of news to bring you from this past week. Jack Singh Brar has won his maiden European Challenge Tour title with a three-shot victory at the Cordon Golf Open. And it's also congratulations to Brar's fellow Englishman, Paul Streeter, who completed a wire-to-wire victory at the Travis Perkins Masters at Woburn Golf Club on the Stayshore Tour. Were you teeing up on the Stayshore Tour this week,
Gordy? I didn't play this because I was moving house.
But, I see. How did that go?
Traumatic.
Really?
Traumatic. It was like making bogeys every hole.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you didn't make the cut when moving?
No, but Paul Streeter, first 2 days, was exceptional.
Was it?
Carl Mason said that's the best golf I've ever seen from anybody. And he completed it as a wire-to-wire victory.
Fantastic.
On Sunday.
Brilliant.
His first victory came through Q School, so brilliant for him.
So you missed moving day because that day you were moving. Excellent. Top 10 in the world looks like this, and we have had changes. This week, 10th position is Jordan Spieth, down one. Ricky Fowler also down one to 9th. Rory McIlroy slips to 8th, and the movement because Bryson DeChambeau is in at 7, first time in the top 10 for the two-time FedEx Cup playoff winner over the course of the last month. He's been fantastic, and now, of course, part of the USA Ryder Cup squad. 6th position, Francesco Molinari. Top 5 hasn't changed either. John Rahm in 5th, Justin Rose 4th, 3 Americans, 3-2-1, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, and Dustin Johnson. Should we be worried, Gordy, when it comes to the Ryder Cup? They've got the top 3.
They've always had a stronger side on paper, but it goes into relevance when Europe is such a good team to play against. Who knows?
Time to look ahead to this week's event now, the Omega European Masters, held at a venue with arguably the most breathtaking views on tour, the Cran-sur-Sierre Golf Club in the Swiss Alps. Last year, Matt Fitzpatrick beat Australian Scott Hend in a playoff to secure his 4th European Tour title, and he's back to defend his crown. Gordy, you've played there. I'm suggesting breathtaking views. What are you suggesting?
Oh, it's an absolute stunning place, just below the snow line.
Yeah.
The court is 6,934 yards long, with stunning views up in the Alps, and the ball goes a little bit further. It really is a wonderful place to play, and it's a lot of fun, not only on the golf course, but in the town as well.
Is it really? The blurb here says the ball will travel up to 15% further. Why is that?
Yeah, because you're up in the sky.
Yeah, but less, why?
Less altitude.
Okay.
Goes further.
Thank you, Professor Brown
Thank
Jr.
You. The course has been revamped as well over the years, and they maybe didn't like the revamping initially, but the players have got their heads around it and seem to enjoy the event.
Jamie Spence has won there. Seve Ballesteros, of course, has won there as well. Did some tinkering with the course a few years ago.
He did. Well, Jamie Spence, funny enough, he comes on this programme every
so
often.
He's excellent. Rattles through the top 10 in the world like you've never seen.
Jamie shot 60 the last day, and I think that's the lowest score ever.
Yeah, the blurb also says here, it says that Crans-sur-Cia becomes a ski resort in the winter as the course is covered in several feet of snow. But summer provides perfect playing conditions for golf. Are you a skier?
You see how high it is up there? Yeah, no wonder it snows.
Yeah, but are you a skier? Snowboard?
No, never wanted to
bit
do
of
that.
Bit of après ski.
Never wanted to do that. Very dangerous for the golf, but funny enough, Bruno Langer does it.
Does he
really?
Good.
He's good. Very good.
Snowboard?
No, just skis.
Just skis. Yeah. Oh, good on him. Who's playing this week?
Who's playing this week is Matt Wallace.
Yeah.
So he's going for another win.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Peters. Mm-hmm. Lee Westwood just off a playoff. Ross Fisher. Martin Kaymer. Danny Willett, Alex Levy, Paul Dunn.
Names that have been playing well recently, because we've seen, obviously, Matt Wallace win. We've seen Thomas Peters up on leaderboards recently. When it comes to Peters in particular, not quite sure this venue suits him. He's a bit of a bomber. He likes to knock it out there. Have you got to be a little cuter off the tee? You've got to be more accurate this week, do you think?
It's quite a tight course, but there does ask the question sometimes with some par fives. They can reach if it's a bomber, but generally it's not a bomber's course. It's a sort of Lee Westwood course.
What about
Believe it or not.
Well, what about Danny Willett? Danny's played well last 6 months. He was in the doldrums, as we know, but there are signs that his game's getting back to what it was.
There has been some sort of revival from him, hasn't he, over the last few months. Who knows? I mean, I like Paul Dunn on this one as well.
Well, we'll get your selections in just a second. We've got to mention Erik van Rooyen played really well in the Open. Kiridek Appiah-Barnrat has been globetrotting. He's been playing in America and he's been playing in Europe as well. He's not had the best of summers, but he is a threat because he's a European Tour winner. And Eduardo Molinari might just get a bit of inspiration given what his brother has done over the summer. One final name to mention before we get our two picks. John Daly is 170th European Tour start. Not the force that he was, but he still plays on the European Tour a couple of times every single year in events like this. He's great for the fans, isn't it, Gordon?
Oh, he's a seriously interesting character, and he brings some colour to the event.
Fantasy Race 2 Dubai picks then. Two each, one main pick and one outside the top 50 in the 2017 Race 2 Dubai standings. Gordy, who are you going for?
Well, I'm going for an outsider, Lee Slattery. He's been just playing quite steady at the moment. I think it's about time that he returned to some serious form. And the other player is Paul Dunn. One victory on the European Tour, and I think this is a course that will suit him down to the ground. Great short grain, great putter. That's what you need around Kram.
I'm going to go for the young Belgian player, Thomas Detry, who was seventh in Maiden Denmark last time out. Top 15s the last three events that he's played. I think he's in that winner waiting to happen category. And Lucas Bjerregaard, who was top 10 in Denmark last week, obviously as a Danish player, there was a lot of pressure on him. But we've seen over the course of the last year that he is a talented performer and he's been getting closer to a summer win. So I'm hopeful that Lucas, after finishing ninth in the Czech Masters, sixth in Maiden Denmark, he can go a little bit closer to that win this week. That is all for now. Next week, we will review matters at the Omega European Masters and also look ahead to the KLM Open in the Netherlands. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and Snapchat via europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. But for now, from Gordon Brown Jr.,
goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will see you next time.